Hinton's talk on Awakening Compassion Inside and Out with a quote from on compassion from the book The Lost Art of Compassion by Lauren Ladner. So compassion is the most exalted of all states of heart and mind. The implication is that among all positive emotions that people can generate, compassion is the very best. If we want to be happy, compassion is the mental state that most effectively grants us our wish. And Jack Kornfield, from his book Wise Heart, which I highly recommend, we need compassion, not anger, to help us be tender with our difficulties and not close off to them in fear. This is how healing takes place. So together today, we're going to spend some time on compassion in general, with great attention focusing on self-compassion, what it is and why it is necessary for us to have true compassion for others. To start, let's take a look at how self-compassion is defined scientifically. According to Kristen Neff, psychologist and meditation teacher, and co-author of, or an author of numerous books, she said, self-compassion entails mindfulness of your own suffering, responding to yourself with kindness, and feelings of interconnectedness with humanity. And then she breaks the word down into the passion and calm. The word passion of the compassion part means suffering, and the C-O-M, the calm, means with. So how do we learn to be with our suffering, with our difficulties, with our challenges? And with papers that don't stick because they have tea on them. According to Neff, the first step in giving yourself compassion is to be aware that you are suffering. And of course that requires mindfulness, or at least being aware of it. This may sound simple, but it is our human nature to not want to be with our suffering or be aware of it at all. Some of the reactions or responses that we are likely to have is to immediately go into problem-solving mode. And we do that with ourselves, we do it with others, or just suppress the feelings. Or maybe we've developed a habit of getting lost in the suffering and thus over-identifying with it. An example from my own life regarding this is a couple of years ago, when my granddaughter, who's now 17, but when she was like 12 or 13, so it's more than a couple of years ago, was getting into some of this modeling stuff. And I was very frustrated with my daughter, my youngest daughter, for allowing that to go on, because I really didn't like the poses that this little preteen was doing for these modeling companies, this modeling company's so-called get marketed to do modeling. But I wasn't talking to her about it. It was coming out in my attitude towards my daughter, who I'm extremely close to. And so I was doing a lot of suffering with it. I was creating suffering with her because I wasn't dealing with myself and my feelings, and I wasn't dealing with her around it. So I use that, I mean, we straightened it out eventually, but I use that as an example of how subtly we create our own suffering. I knew better. There were other things I could have done with that way sooner than I did. So the first step is learning to step outside of ourselves as we recognize we are suffering or hurting or having difficulty. Saying like, hey, I'm having a real hard time right now, which I should have done about 6 months earlier. What are we going to do about it? Doesn't mean you're necessarily going to fix it. This takes real courage to be with ourselves and our pain or difficulty. A regular mindfulness practice helps make it easier for us to be able to observe what's happening, to recognize it as suffering or difficulty or challenge, or I don't like this. The second step is to respond to this difficulty within yourself with the same kindness that you would show to a good friend. And that's such a simple concept, but it's such a challenging thing for us to do and realize. Being warm and supportive with ourselves rather than cold and judgmental, for many of us, is really totally new territory. Often we can be harder and more unforgiving with ourselves than with anyone else in our lives. How many of you, with yourself or heard other people that are close to you, say things to themselves or to yourself that you would never ever say to another person? You'll call yourself, well, what a shit. Why did I do that? Why did I think that? Why did I say that? What's wrong with me? And you hear people mutter it half to themselves and half under their breath, but what are you doing? You're reinforcing this negative image of yourself every single time you do that. What we do with others is we get into blaming, you know, whether we verbalize it or not. So then we create an image of them in a certain way that we're blaming. So we do this. We do this to ourselves and to others all the time. So before we go further, I want to take a moment to explain the difference between self-compassion and pity, because that gets confused a lot of times. And to quote Kristen Neff again, what differentiates self-compassion from pity is framing your own struggle and imperfection in light of sheer human experience. It's important to realize that your experience is not isolated from a larger whole, and that life and people are imperfect everywhere. This is the nature of actually being human. At the very least, everyone struggles and gets ill and has difficulties in life. And although we know this, although we know this rationally, what usually happens emotionally, is that we feel something is wrong with us. We don't like what's happening, which is normal. But then we begin to feel very isolated in our struggle because we feel something is wrong for us having this suffering. And there's a story that I think was in one of Tara Brach's talks or books. It's a story of Laban, and this illustrates this very well. A woman named Laban came to meditation 3 years after her husband's death. She was angry and depressed. She had closed herself off from the world as if her loss was an unforgivable betrayal. She lived alone, out of contact with old friends and her sisters and their children. And she abandoned the political work that once inspired her. Life felt cold, unforgiving, and meaningless. Her body grew stiff. She knew she needed help. Over the two months of her meditation retreat with 1,000 soft breaths, she began to release the pain of her grieving body. She practiced loving kindness and compassion for herself, and then her compassion grew to include all those who, like her, had lost their most beloved family members. Laban's heart began to ease. One day at breakfast, she took a hard-boiled egg and carried it with her for 2 days during her walking and sitting meditation. She said it was her heart, round and smooth and warm. It was her way of holding herself, of bringing loving warmth back to her grieving heart. She said, "Now I am ready to go back and love the world again." This is the response. This is the compassion response. It's associated, and that's really associated with the caring aspect of our mammalian nervous system. So a most popular and formal self-compassion practice is using language. Affirming language is referred to by Kristen Neff as a self-compassion break, and you can do this anytime. I want to come back to this in a little bit, but before we do, here's some current research findings related to self-compassion. Neff and her associate, Germer, have been quite involved in scientific research on self-compassion. And in their training, they emphasize the informal practices involving using language, which I will use when I guide you through this self-compassion break. Neff says from their research, self-compassion really seems to help and is strongly linked to well-being. We know that people who receive self-compassion training feel less depressed and stressed. They also suffer less from maladaptive perfectionism, less from shame, and have less performance anxiety, body dissatisfaction, eating disorders, and chronic pain. When you hold your pain in a sense of kindness, care, and connectedness, it tends to reduce these more psychological states of mind. Even though the pain is there, it feels good to be in the state of loving, connected presence. And we also know from brain research that through repetition, we create new neural pathways to the brain. So if we learn to give ourselves nurturing messages, as we are creating new pathways and thus generating positive emotions and reducing the negative emotions simultaneously. It has been found that self-compassion often increases insight and life satisfaction because of an increase of overall happiness, coping, resilience, and motivation. Self-compassion is a skill you can always have with you. So before we practice the self-compassion break, let's focus a little bit on what's referred to as the backdraft. And this is just a little caveat before. This means that when you get still and choose to go inside and give love and caring to yourself, it doesn't always feel so good. Most of the time, this is normal at first, since most of us were taught to be caring of others, but not ourselves. So this can simply be because you are not used to surrounding yourself and nurturing yourself in this way. And it will just take practice to get used to it and to have it feel more comfortable. However, it may be that there are deeper traumas and issues that are coming up because you are no longer pushing them away. It is important to listen to yourself here, and if it feels like too much, you need to reach out for support from a teacher and or a therapist. This is not your fault, and you are not doing anything wrong. It is your way of alerting, it is your wiser self's way of alerting you to get some help and support on this part of your journey. What may be happening is that you may be discovering conditions under which you were not loved and may need some outside help finding that self-love. So we're going to do a little practicing here because I would like you to be able to take away some things today that maybe can be useful. So what's called a self-compassion break is really like a short meditation. So just get yourself comfortable again like you did for the practice a little bit ago. And if you feel comfortable closing your eyes. So just focus on or think about a challenge or problem in your life right now. And on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm suggesting that it's something that's lower, like a 3, no more than a 4. It's not a pebble and not a boulder, but it's just a little small rock that you can hold in the palm of your hand. It's enough of a challenge that when you think about it, you sometimes don't want to think about it. It makes you a little agitated. So we're going to meet that problem with the 3 components of self-compassion. If right now, at this point in your day, you don't feel like doing this, then don't do it. If you're wanting to do this, please allow your eyes to close. Give yourself a nice audible, maybe just ah. You can also feel that with compassion comes a quality of relaxation. Imagine a cute little puppy that you just see the little puppy and you go just, ah. So as you just sit there in that thought, intention of self-compassion, actually, physically, you're activating the physiology of self-compassion. So just allow yourself to let yourself be into this situation in your mind that's challenging. Perhaps in your mind's eye, seeing the setting of this challenge, maybe the people. Perhaps there might be some words in your mind associated with this challenge. But most importantly, noticing how it feels in your body as you get more focused on this challenge, how it feels right now. As you become more present to this challenge in your mind. And then just offer yourself these words or something similar that feels right to you. Something like, this is a moment of suffering. Right now, this is a moment of challenge or difficulty or suffering. And just notice how it feels, especially in your body, when you validate that for yourself. And this can be challenging, this can be hard. Notice what happens. So just doing this part is the first step, and it's the quality of mindfulness. First component of this self-compassion. And so now going into the second component, consider something like these words to yourself. Suffering or discomfort or whatever the feeling is for you around this is a part of living. It's a part of being human. You're not saying this to invalidate the experience, but rather just to recognize and know that this is how it feels in this situation right now, and that suffering is part of this human experience. I am not alone right now, though it may feel that way. And then noticing how it may feel in the body to connect with this awareness. How it feels that you don't have to be isolated. That it's not your fault. And if you feel comfortable doing so, I invite you to put your hands over your heart or on your cheek, or gently maybe putting one hand inside the other on your lap. Whatever feels most soothing or comforting to you. And then offering yourself a kind invitation. May I be kind to myself. because of this situation. May I be kind to myself in this situation. May I give myself the compassion that I need. Allowing yourself to take in that kindness and connecting to how this may feel in your own body to offer this to yourself. This is your self-kindness. To take it a little bit further, and this may help sometimes even to do this before the step we just did. Imagine a friend, somebody you like, who may have the same situation, the same thing that you just were looking at. Somebody you care about. And imagining that you just have a brief moment with this friend. A brief heart-to-heart moment. You're not trying to give advice or fix anything. You just want to say something to them that will maybe roll around in your friend's mind and feel supportive and caring. So whatever you think you might say to this friend, say that to yourself right now, in addition. And see if you can surround yourself with those words. Maybe not. Just see what happens. Now as you let go of the words, take a moment just to notice how it feels in your body, what it's like to bring kindness to yourself, simply because you're in a challenging situation. Taking in a few deep breaths. When you're ready, just letting yourself open your eyes. Give yourself a moment to come back into the room. According to Jack Kornfield, noted meditation teacher, Buddha put it quite simply, you can search the whole tenfold universe and not find a single being more worthy of love and compassion than the one seated right here, yourself. He further states, self-compassion and self-forgiveness are not weaknesses, but roots, the roots of our courage and magnanimity. So now we'll briefly explore awakening compassion for others. Renowned meditation teacher Tara Brach says, compassion for our own fear and shame opens us to others. The courageous heart is the one that is unafraid to open to the world. With compassion, we come to trust our capacity to open to life without armoring. So in meditation, we embrace, accept, and befriend our human condition. In practicing self-compassion, we open our hearts to love ourselves in order to love the world. It is said that the degree that you make friends with yourself, to that degree you have acceptance of others. Therefore, in order to truly have compassion for others, we need to have acceptance and compassion for ourselves. We learn to look at ourselves and our suffering with loving kindness, compassion, and mindfulness. With understanding and compassion, we are able to heal the wounds in our hearts and the wounds in the world. With compassion in our heart, every thought, word, action can bring about a miracle. Often we do not know the impact that those thoughts, words, and actions have had on someone. Sometimes we may find out later. The important thing is that we are ever mindful of being compassionate with the intention that our thoughts, words, and actions have a positive effect on ourselves and on others. By being able to empathize with other persons' experiences and feelings, we develop compassion. We recognize that everybody wants happiness and also suffers. While you certainly find people whom you are closer to, feel closer to and more distance from, you can still have compassion for everyone. When you have true, deep compassion for yourself, compassion for others is also deep with no strings attached. In this world of pain, uncertainty, and injustice, we are offered many opportunities to either contract and shut the world out or stand up with dignity and compassion and allow the heart to respond. Not coming from a need to please others or win their approval or love, but from a place of genuine reaching out in caring and kindness. Cultivating compassion for self and others is the single most effective way to make one's self psychologically healthy, happy, joyful, and have a meaningful life. In conclusion, the essence of compassion is that it contains a strong motivation to act. True compassion means actively engaging with the suffering of the world and responding to the various needs of beings, including oneself, in whatever ways are possible, whatever ways are appropriate. Jack Kornfield again says, compassion blossoms only when we remember ourselves and others with the two sides in balance. The important thing is to water and nurture the seeds of compassion within us and cultivate the intention to benefit all beings.